Welcome to Healthy You Radio Network, radio that empowers you to heal you. This is Dr. Keisha Ewers, your network host, and I'm proud to introduce the most dynamic show on radio that's all about the health of your mind and the expansion of your consciousness. Welcome to Mind Matters Radio with meditation guru, registered hypnotherapist, Enneagram coach, and Reiki master, Ajayan Boris.
Ever wonder what you're really capable of? Scientists tell us we use only a fraction of our true potential. Welcome to Mind Matters, part of the Healthy You Radio Network, where we'll explore the frontiers of human growth. Find out what experts in the field of psychology, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, and science have to say that will help you to live your life to the fullest. And now your host, Ajayan Boris.
And welcome, everyone, to Mind Matters Radio. I'm Ajayan Boris, your fellow explorer of human potential. And we are here every Monday for one reason, and that is because your mind really does matter, and we want to bring you the latest and greatest information to empower you to heal and develop your mind. So today, our guest, very interesting, is Helen Croydon. She is the author of Screw the Fairy Tale, A Modern Girl's Guide to Sex and Love. And I believe Helen is a writer, and she's written several other books. Helen, welcome to Mind Matters.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Now, you've written a couple previous books. Do you want to mention those titles? I didn't have them here on my bio. All of a sudden, I realized.
Yeah, my first book, which is probably what I'm best known for, was called Sugar Daddy Diaries, and that's it's a memoir of it's a dating memoir. but in my younger days, so I'd always had a thing for older men. So it's very much a tale of how I went and went through a phase where I explored that fantasy. So it's quite a funny read, but and quite soul-searching at the same time. And then that was out in the UK in 2011, and then in the USA it was out last year. And then my current book, which is just out, which you mentioned, Screw the Fairy Tale, is my new one, and that's the one I'm more excited about because it's new, and that's all about modern models of relationships. And I'm
right.
It's very interesting.
You know, as the title would indicate, Screw the Fairy Tale, you kind of, take a different avenue than many people in probably most of our listeners who envision themselves either in or someday being in a long-term committed relationship, and you take a different route. We're going to talk about that, but first I want to just ask, what inspired you to write this book?
What inspired me? Well, because I think I had a voice that represented a lot of people, it seemed to be, I've never really fancied the idea of marriage and kids and that lifestyle, you know, of coming home to someone and doing everything together and giving up my independence. But it just seems to be that that is what society expects us to do. And no one seems to question whether that is what we really want. So I was desperate to write this book to express my own feelings, because when I started to talk to people about it, I realized that lots of people felt the same way as me.
All right. And do you have an idea of, well, what it is about that, you know, quote, fairy tale that didn't appeal to you or doesn't appeal to you?
Yeah, it's the idea that you lose a lot of your independence and your sense of self, I think, when you're in a typical modern model of relationship. So, of course, I want to fall in love. I think we all do. You know, who doesn't want that beautiful romantic spark and butterflies in the stomach? You know, of course, I want that. But the lifestyle, you know, I think the model of relationship, which society has kind of created for what constitutes a proper relationship, a respectable relationship, is this idea that you have to compromise yourself and you have to do everything together. You know, these days a partner is expected to be your flatmate because it's sort of a given that you're going to live together. They're supposed to be your best friend. You go on every holiday together. You merge your social diaries. And I've always felt that, you know, that takes something away from me. me. Whenever I've been in a relationship and I've had some real happy relationships and they've formed some of the happiest memories, but I've always felt that a little something of me is lost. The spark is lost. My sense of independence, my my ambition, my thirst for adventure somehow, the time that I have with friends, my emotional capacity to make new networks of friendships, etc., seems to be diminished when I'm in a relationship. So that's why I wanted to look at, you know, whether it's possible to actually to fall in love and to have that intimacy that we all crave, but without having this this sort of socially imposed kind of you've got to do everything together rules of relationships, because I don't think that's really compatible with the modern world. Everything else in our society is geared towards independence. We're, you know, in the Western world, we're encouraged to be individuals. Entrepreneurial spirit is sort of promoted. So this idea then that on the other side of the coin is that, you know, you meet a partner and you have to do everything together. It just doesn't marry up. So that's what I wanted to look at in this book, of what are the alternatives, what sort of models of relationships are out there that allow you to be free and still be in love.
Right. Okay, so I you know, can appreciate that for some people it would not be, you know, the sort of typical relationship where you do anticipate living together and doing everything together and being best friends and buddies and, you know, financially joined at the hip and everything else. But that might not work for everybody. In your research, did you find that there were some people who were perfectly happy with that? In other words, is it a fairy tale for everyone, or is that what you're saying, or do you feel that it's just not for you and a certain, you know, subset of society?
Oh, absolutely. It's not. This is, you know, my view and how I feel, and I think, you know, the overall message is that there is no one-size-fits-all to a relationship. Absolutely. I interviewed all sorts of couples in this book, couples in conventional and non-conventional setups, and for some people, that sort of living together and being joined at the hip suits them fine. And, you know, there are some people who want that constant companionship. There's some people that are just not very good on their own. They don't like being on their own. They wouldn't want to live on their own. And you know what? That's fine. Conventional couples probably suit them fine. But there are others who describe feeling oppressed by that. You know, there are others who say that they don't really want to live with their partner. They thrive better when they're on their own. There's some that that struggle with monogamy. There are, so I know that might sound like an excuse to play around, but really, you know, I did quite in-depth interviews, and a lot of people struggle with that. There are some people that that struggle with sexuality. You know, they want an intimate partner, but actually they're asexual. And so there's all sorts of models of relationships. There's all sorts of ways that we can live. Some couples, you know, one of the partners might have gone off sex, so they grant permission for their partner to have an affair, but yet they still have the friendship and the bond and the family model. So the overall message is that we shouldn't, we have a very stringent view on what the fairy tale is, and our partner has to complete us and they're supposed to make all our dreams come true. You know, that isn't the reality for a lot of people. That isn't what they want. So I think we just need to be a bit more relaxed on our definition of what coupledom is.
Yeah, it seems to me that There is an aspect of fairy tale if we do expect the other person to complete us. I mean, I think that there can be a wonderful richness in sharing life's experiences with somebody that you love and that you really connect to. And in that sense, it's very fulfilling. But if you're somehow, sort of feeling inadequate as a person in yourself, and you look to a relationship to solve that particular problem, you're probably going to be disappointed. You know, the quality of your relationship may be codependent or in some way, you know, not entirely healthy, I would think, and it won't bring that same fulfillment. I think we've got to, work on ourselves, so to speak, or, find ourselves, whether we're in a relationship or not. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is the downfall of lots of relationships. I think it's the high expectations we put on them. And it is this, you know, what I call in my book, I call it the fairy tale narrative. And I say, you know, this is the force that sort of believe that as soon as we meet a Mr. or Mrs. Right, everything will be okay. You know, we view sort of marriage and meeting someone as the ultimate success. It's like, okay, we've landed, we've met someone, and then people like don't worry about you anymore because they think you're going to live happily ever after. When in fact, you know, it is that actually, which is quite damaging because that isn't reality. It's impossible to expect one person to answer all our needs. Or it's impossible actually to get one person to even understand us on a very deep level. If we can't even understand ourselves, how can we get some? You know, we've lived with ourselves for our whole life. How can we expect a partner to read us and get us and understand us? So absolutely, fulfillment comes from ourselves. But it's amazing how many people believe that, you know, meeting someone is going to make all their dreams come true. And actually, you know, what I talk about in my book is, you know, there's a whole chapter in there about the history of marriage and the role that it served. And, you know, it was never about emotional fulfillment or love and companionship until about 200 years ago. So for thousands and thousands and thousands of years throughout most of, you know, the history of the civilized world, marriage was practical. It was about securing family ties. It was about inheritance. It was about business connections. And then because it was a necessity, you know, life was pretty labor intense. You pretty much had to form a family, and you had to live with someone. You had to have a spouse. And then it's only in the last 200 years when life's become easier since the Industrial Revolution, really, young people started to think about, you know, self-fulfillment, and the pursuit of happiness became a kind of a talking point, and it really wasn't for thousands of years. So people started to say, hey, I want to marry someone that I love. And this is like quite a radical change of human history, and that was only 200 years ago. So since we started, you know, that's what I call the fairy tale. That is when the fairy tale formed. It was like 200 years ago. And it's since then that, you know, we've had all these disappointments with relationships because we put so much pressure on them for our fulfillment.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, what you're saying there about the change that took place in society some 200 years ago, probably very much related to the Industrial Revolution, I would think, like you said, because of the greater ease. It kind of reminds me, you know, of course, of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, when we take care of those survival needs, then only then can we really start to think about things like spiritual growth, for instance, and I imagine fulfillment through a relationship, which doesn't necessarily mean that it's a fantasy or a misplaced ideal. It just means, okay, we've taken care of, our society has grown and evolved to the point where we've taken care of, you know, these basic fundamental needs. Now we can think about other things. So I would just throw that out there. But aside from that, you've researched a lot and talked to many people and found a lot of different situations about other ways that people are forming relationships. And before we get into all of that, I wonder if you could just describe what your personal solution has been. Like, where has this led you to in your personal life?
Well, I haven't really found a solution yet. What I'd like is a what I call a part-time lover. I did in the course of writing the book fall in love myself. And at first I thought, oh my gosh, here I am writing a book about being happily single and not wanting a serious relationship, and then I won't find a relationship. I thought, oh no, this isn't going to be good for the book. But then, of course, it was good for the book because it allowed me to fall in love and experience a relationship which I hadn't done for a few years because I've been single for a very long time. And, you know, it allowed me to kind of question my own argument in a way. And actually, you know, I was never saying I don't want to fall in love. The book's not about, you know, if someone says they're happily single, it's not that they don't want to find love. It's probably just more that they, you know, they love their independence and they maybe don't want those pressures of 24/7 commitment and relationship. So I met someone while I was writing the book, and I was with with him for a year and a half. And then, but you know what, the same thing happened again. I just started to feel a little bit, too many demands, things getting, weekends sort of taken as a given that we have to do something together. And I felt like I was having less time to spend with my friends, less time to spend on my passions. And that's what is so difficult, is finding a relationship that, or finding someone that, really does truly allow you to be free and allow you to exercise that independence. He said he did, lots of people do. But reality is, I think,
Helen, sorry to interrupt. I want you to finish this thought. It's very interesting. That music that's coming on, that means we have to go to a break. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Mind Matters, and I'm Jane Boris, and we're talking with Helen Croydon, author of Screw the Fairy Tale.
Enjoy a relaxing, healing, hour-long Reiki session through the hands of meditation and Reiki master Ajayan Boris. Reiki treats the whole person, including body, emotions, mind, and spirit, creating many beneficial effects that include relaxation and feelings of peace, security, and well-being. Many have reported miraculous results. Ajayan incorporates tantric mantras and yantras that bring an added dimension and power to traditional Reiki healing. To find out more and to schedule your appointment, email ajayan@ajayan.com today.
Meditation heals and vitalizes both mind and body. Learn this wonderful art with world-renowned meditation instructor Ajayan Boris in the Effortless Mind Meditation Classes. The Effortless Mind Meditation Classes offer a direct experience of exceptionally deep meditation, accessible to anyone. Call the Fern Life Center today, 425-391-FERN. The Effortless Mind. So easy, anyone can do it.
Ajayan's next Effortless Mind Meditation class is being held in Issaquah, April 5th. For more information and to register, visit ajayan.com. That's ajayan.com.
Information provided on the Healthy You radio show is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for the advice provided by your physician or other healthcare professional. You should not use the information from the broadcast of the radio show for diagnosing or treating a health problem, disease, or prescribing any medication or other treatment.
Write it down, shout it loud. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. Now, wasn't that fun?
All right, you're listening to Mind Matters, and I'm Jane Boris, and of course, Mind Matters is part of the Healthy You radio network. And if you can't tune in each Monday at 1 p.m., you can access all of our shows 24/7 via podcast or archived on healthyyouradio.com or ajayan.com. And if you're out of radio range, you can listen live online via healthyyouradio.com or ajayan.com. And, of course, also join me on Twitter at Effortless Mind and Facebook at Effortless Mind Meditation. All right, we are speaking with Helen Croydon, author of Screw the Fairy Tale, A Modern Girl's Guide to Sex and Love. And Helen is a journalist in Great Britain, and she's written several books. And this is a very interesting read. If you're one of those people who find that you just don't thrive in a traditional, committed long-term relationship, it just isn't like the shoe doesn't fit somehow, then you must read this book. She's researched a lot of alternative possibilities, and you know, it's a fascinating read. So Screw the Fairy Tale. Check it out. And I'm sure you can get that at local bookstores or Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, wherever good books are sold. So, Helen, back to our discussion. You were saying about, you know, the avenue that you've personally chosen. And I'm sorry I had to interrupt you, but go ahead and continue.
Oh, yes. So I was talking about how, you know, the difficulty of finding someone who shares the same view of me, which is that I'd like to find, you know, real meaningful romance and a genuine attraction, a meaningful relationship, but that isn't necessarily full-time. So someone who understands that we have independent lives, someone who doesn't presume that just because it's the weekend you have to spend time together, someone who's happy to go on holiday on their own, someone who has an independent life. But I think they, you know, the traditional kind of criteria for a modern relationship is that, you know, if you are a couple, you do X, Y, Z together. You probably are one day going to live together. You know, there's all these kind of givens. There's all these assumptions that that's what you're going to do. But I think that is so deeply entrenched in how we view relationships and how, what we think constitutes a proper relationship, that it's hard to find someone who, you know, shares the alternative view. So what I did recently as part of the answer to that is I launched a dating website, which I wanted, you know, to reflect my views, and it's called parttimelove.net, and it is for just that. It's a modern platform for people who want to find a meaningful romance. They want to find a partner that they care about, probably a monogamous relationship, but they don't want that typical five times a week, let's merge our diaries, let's move in after 3 months. You know, it's not a no-strings-attached site, nor is it about finding your, you know, finding a lifelong partner. It's for those who want romance. They want the spark. They want the good things that come with dating, but they don't necessarily want all the obligations that go with it. So it's the good things that come with romance.
So is that a dating
that is what
site?
I would like.
Is that actually a dating site where people would meet other people, or
yeah,
is it just... It is. Okay, and what was the name of the site again?
Yeah, and it's brand new, too. Yeah, it's called parttimelove.net.
Parttimelove.net, okay. Interesting. Well, you know, as you're speaking, I'm reminded of numerous interviews that I've done with relationship experts, you know. And one in particular, not long ago, I interviewed Stan Tatkins, and in his book and in his audiobook and everything, he talks about the, you know, that relationship bubble. And he talks about that in a very positive way, as if, you know, that is something not to be violated. And so that his concept of that relationship bubble is very much along the lines of what you're calling the fairy tale, actually. And that's just interesting to me that, you know, there's such divergent views on this. And, of course, he's speaking to people who, you know, have that desire for that kind of relationship. But, you know, many experts have the opinion that the real growth in a relationship comes through, you know, when all the hard part starts, when maybe the romance does start to fade, when maybe you do start to feel a little claustrophobic in some way, when you don't feel your needs are being met or your independence is free to fly, you know, as it would like to, that's when you got to start doing the hard work of relationship and sort of find real love beneath just the fresh bloom of romance. What are your thoughts about that, Helen?
Yeah, so I missed the beginning bit of that question because I think our line temporarily went dead. But I think, you know, you're asking what about the work involved in a relationship. Well,
right.
You know, I think it depends on what you want out of it. Of course, you have to work at any relationship, whether it's a friendship, whether it's a working relationship, you know, with colleagues at work. Of course. You do. But I think we create these unnecessary battles and these unnecessary compromises. And what I mean by that is that, you know, when I was interviewing people for the book about how they live their relationships, is that people seem to have all these, what I, you know, from the eyes of a singleton, i.e. from my perspective, it seemed like they had these needless rules and made life so complicated for themselves. For instance, you know, I'd be with colleagues after work having a few drinks in a bar, and someone might say, oh, you know, I can just sneak one more in because, you know, I don't want to get home too late. And I think, well, why? You know, okay, I can understand if you have children, you have young children and childcare duties, that's one thing. But these are people that had no children, and they're, like, worried that, you know, they're going to get home too late and their partner's going to be mad. And then, but they haven't got a date planned. They haven't got anything planned with their partner. They just are worried about getting home late. And when they get home, presumably they're just going to sit in front of the TV. So, and then other things, like, you know, I spoke to one couple who they were talking about how frustrated they were that their, you know, their partner didn't come to a party with them the night before, and their partner apparently didn't have an excuse for it. It was just that they didn't particularly want to go. They wanted some time for themselves. So I think, of course, you have to work at the relationship, but we do put these unnecessary demands on people. You know, if why tell your partner to come home at a certain time? Why not let them have a bit of free time with their friends? Why tell your partner that, you know, why make them go to a wedding, for instance, that they don't want to go to and they don't know any of the people there? So I think we overcompromise. That is... that's what we do wrong. And I think if we allowed people to express their individuality a little bit more, have their own lives, I think relationships would thrive without us having to work so hard at it.
Interesting. I think you have a point. I think there it is kind of a balancing act. You may have missed the part I was saying about Stan Tatkin's a relationship expert that I've had on the show a couple times now, and he talks about the relationship bubble as a positive
right.
thing, actually. And one of the things he talks about in there is handling thirds. What he means by that is you sort of want the priority to be on the relationship bubble, the kind of unity between you and your primary partner, and then. Handling thirds is referring to the idea that whether it's, you know, the mother-in-law or a child or friends outside of the relationship, learning to so that those relationships don't somehow supplant the primacy of the relationship bubble, making your partner insecure. So, I mean, anyway, this is an expert in relationships talking about that, and it certainly has to be a balancing act, I would think, but I can see, you know, both sides that that there shouldn't be an over dependence, such that you're creating arguments out of nothing, and that we should be supporting each other in our individuality as well as in our relationship. But then also that you have, you know, consideration, a great consideration for your partner and their feelings and even their expectations, such that if you want to stay out late, you know, at least call them and say, yeah, you know, I'm really having a great time with, you know, my friends here at the bar, and I just, I'll be back a little late tonight or something like that. You know, I think, yeah, it's kind of a balancing act. What are your thoughts, Helen?
Yeah, well, if only relationships were like that. That is, you know, that's the ideal, isn't it? If you find someone who's so understanding. But it might, you know, very sadly, in the interviews that I did, few people expressed that their partner was so understanding. You know, it was quite amazing, quite sad, actually, how a lot of people talked about, you know, these rules or having to make sacrifices. The word compromise came up so much in my interviews. It's almost like, I think every bit of relationship advice we're given, every book you read, people say, the so-called experts say, oh, a relationship is about a compromise. And we've internalized that so much that I think we now think that a relationship has to be a compromise, that we have to do all these things for our partner. And of course, you want to do all these. You know, I've been in love and want to be in love, crave being in love again. Of course, you want to help someone, you want to do things with them, and you want to spend time with them. Of course you do. But I think there is this sort of duty, you know, people, there's an expectation that you have to do all those things even when you don't want to. So, you know, mm-hmm. the idea that I think it's quite odd that we just assume that a relationship is a compromise without, we don't even question that, you know?
Right. Can I ask you now, so like you did explore many different options and really some of fascinating interviews that you had. Could you name some of the options that you explored and maybe some of their, what you thought of them, what their advantages were, what their disadvantages were? Of course, one of the more sensational ones that you investigated was the polyamorous commune, I guess.
It was fascinating. I went to stay at this commune in Scotland, mm-hmm. and there were 15 people in a relationship. So that's 15 people who claim that they love each other equally. Polyamory, for those listeners who don't know what that is, it's a sort of open relationship, but it's where it's not about having sex with lots of people. It's about genuinely loving lots of people. So they believe that you can love more than one person equally. So there were 15 people living in this one house, and it was quite an amazing setup. It was a commune, so they share their income, they share their duties. Now, at the time I visited, there were only two men living there, and the rest were women, but apparently it hasn't always been like that. Now, on the surface, you know, they all seemed happy and compliant, and they were very loving and affectionate. But when, you know, you dig a bit deeper, and I spent the night there, I sort of realized that this group is kind of the opposite to me. So where I really crave my independence, and although I don't follow convention, and these people don't follow convention, but we're almost like at the opposite end of the scale. So they, if I'm a commitment phobe, these are commitment addicts. You know, that's how I describe it. They, I don't think they got any time alone. They did everything together as a group. They cook together, they eat together, they make all their decisions as a group. They have all these house meetings, and I just think that's amazing. Now, for them, they were all very happy. They obviously love that little setup that they're in. And it's funny because I expected to find some similarities with them, you know, with me. But actually, I found that, gosh, they don't have any independence whatsoever. But they are constantly in a group together. You know, it was fascinating to see they share the same bed. So their bedroom is this huge room where they put four mattresses on the floor against the wall, and that's where they all sleep, just on the floor in the same room.
Wow. Do they also, so presumably they're sexually active, right?
Yes, very.
I
think they were well behaved when I was visiting, but they told me, you know, they informed me that they are very sexual. But they're also very calm and tame. So three of them go out to work as decorators. I don't know if you use the same term in America, you know, painting walls and things. So they have to get up at 6 o'clock, so they all go to bed very early. They don't drink. Generally, they only drink on Fridays. But they have what they call a treats Friday, and then they buy wine and they buy nice food. And that's when they have a bit of party, and that's when I think a lot of the sexual exploits happen. But they say from day to day, they don't have sex in the main bedroom because they say that's too disruptive to sleep. So they have another bedroom. They have a spare bedroom, which is where I slept. And that's apparently where they have, you know, where they go if they want some intimate action. And they said to me, what happens is that, you know, they might just be doing their own thing in the kitchen, in the living room, and then someone might say, oh, well, you know, I'm feeling amorous. Does anyone want to join me? And they go into this room. So quite amazing, quite fascinating. And the women, they were all bisexual. So I think, well, they informed me that a lot of it's the women who instigate their sexual experiences.
Interesting. Okay. So, well, you wouldn't really be, that lifestyle didn't appeal to you at all. In fact, it was like the opposite of what you're looking for.
This is the opposite, because they don't get any independence at all. And which makes me think, well, you know, there's obviously something about the personalities of these people which drive them to wanting to be in a commune setting. And again, that's fine for them. You know, whatever relationship model works for you, if you don't like being on your own, if you function better as part of a group than an individual, then go ahead and pursue that. You know, if you really feel like you can love more than one person, you don't want to dedicate your life to just one person, you prefer a polyamorous setup, fine, go and do that. You know, society should enable us to do that. And these people seemed to thrive in that setting. I personally would go absolutely crazy living like that. You know,
right.
I need my space. But they loved it.
Great. Okay. Well, Helen, I think let's take this chance to go to our final break, and then we'll be back. You're listening to Mind Matters. I am Ajayan Boris, and we are talking with Helen Croydon, who is the author of Screw the Fairy Tale. Stay with us.
Enjoy a relaxing, healing, hour-long Reiki session through the hands of meditation and Reiki master Ajayan Boris. Reiki treats the whole person, including body, emotions, mind, and spirit, creating many beneficial effects that include relaxation and feelings of peace, security, and well-being. Many have reported miraculous results. Ajayan incorporates tantric mantras and yantras that bring an added dimension and power to traditional Reiki healing. To find out more and to schedule your appointment, email ajayan@ajayan.com today. Get half off on your Reiki treatment with Ajayan. Email ajayan@ajayan.com. That's ajayan.com to schedule your appointment today.
Do you suffer from allergies, food sensitivities, hormone imbalance, depression, fatigue, weight gain, burnout, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, autoimmune disorders, skin problems, anxiety, or have stomach or gut issues? There is a solution. Dr. Keisha Ewers has over 30 years in medicine and brings the world of naturopathic medicine, Ayurveda, and her Western medical education together to form an integrative approach to solving the root cause of illness. Dr. Keisha spends more time with her patients than most doctors and really listens to their stories in order to help cure a problem rather than just treating symptoms. Give yourself the gift of good health and call Dr. Keisha today. Take control of your life and call Fern Life Center at 425-391-3376 for an appointment. For more information about Dr. Keisha and Fern Life Center, go to fernlifecenter.com. Mention this ad and get a copy of Keisha's Anti-Inflammatory Lifestyle article for free. Most insurance plans accepted.
Meditation heals and vitalizes both mind and body. Learn this wonderful art with world-renowned meditation instructor Ajayan Boris in the Effortless Mind Meditation Classes. The Effortless Mind Meditation Classes offer a direct experience of exceptionally deep meditation, accessible to anyone. Call the Fern Life Center today, 425-391-FERN. The Effortless Mind. So easy, anyone can do it.
Ajayan's next Effortless Mind Meditation class is being held in Issaquah April 5th. For more information and to register, visit ajayan.com. That's ajayan.com.
1150kknw.com. Your connection to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. I'm Ajayan Boris, and you're listening to Mind Matters. And we're talking with Helen Croydon. She is the author of Screw the Fairy Tale, A Modern Girl's Guide to Sex and Love, a very interesting book about alternatives to the what we think tend to think of in our society as the norm, which actually, of course, is not the norm for everybody. You know, many people have different preferences, and so it's not the norm for everybody. And she's gone and explored alternatives, which we're going to talk about in just a second, but I also want to mention that she's put up a website for people to meet each other who want love in their lives but maybe don't want that, what we think of as the long-term committed relationship, you know, standard. And so that website is, if you're interested, parttimelove.net. And it's spelled just the way it sounds, parttimelove.net. Is there a hyphen between part and time, Helen?
No, there isn't.
Okay, no hyphen. I wanted to stick a hyphen in there. But okay, I'll let it go. So, Helen, what other alternatives? You just, before the break, it was very interesting to hear about the polyamorous group that you visited. What other styles of relating that maybe, you know, to our ears sound a little unusual did you come across?
Yeah, so I looked at all sorts of models of relationships. I'll list a few and then I'll go into detail of you. So I looked at asexual relationships, which is where, you know, people actually think they want that intimate relationship, but actually they are asexual, so they have no sex drive. I looked at open relationships, and I went to swingers clubs and interviewed the people there, which was
interesting. Can I interrupt for 1 second?
Yes.
So the asexual relationship, let's just hear a few words about each of these. The asexual relationship, did you gather why they were asexual? I'm sure there were various reasons, but I wondered if you got into that.
It's thought to be biological. It's estimated that 1% of the population are asexual. So, and obviously this, there's a nature-nurture debate going on, which says, are people born asexual or are they, or do they become asexual? Interestingly, a lot of the debates and a lot of the stigma around asexuality seems to be a real echo of sort of the, our conceptions of homosexuality several years ago, sort of decades ago, before homosexuality was fully accepted into society. Obviously, we know that, a lot of gay people were sadly very stigmatized against, which is, one of the great injustices of the world. But a lot of the asexuals that I interviewed echoed a lot of those comments and said that they felt marginalized by society. They felt ridiculed because they'd never had a sex drive. Many of them described never having a sex drive, that they were born that way, that they, they when they were teenagers, when all their friends were giggling over boys or girls and looking at naughty magazines, they just had absolutely no desire. And they felt, it was very sad because they described feeling that there was something wrong with them. One woman I interviewed said that, she wanted a relationship. She craved that closeness. She even fancied guys, because they still have a romantic attraction, but not sexual attraction. So she still kind of fancied guys and couldn't, there was people that she couldn't get out of her head still. But then when she actually got into a relationship, the thought of having sex just completely mortified her. So, and she said, she thought there was something wrong with her. She Googled it, and then she came across asexuality. So the penny dropped. And, lots of people I spoke to had similar stories to this. So
these were not people necessarily who chose to be, celibate for spiritual reasons or who had...
Yes, that's very different. Yes.
That's a different thing. And also, they were also not people who had a history of sexual abuse who somehow had some, you know, their, as a kind of reaction to that, had a difficulty even imagining, you know, having sex or something like that. It wasn't that either.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I think that happened. That's a very sad situation. So, I mean, that happens, and people go, you know, that's classed more of a sexual disorder, and people can go to therapy and counseling and get, you know, treatment for that.
Right.
And that's a very real issue as well, which I didn't go into for this book. But asexuality is something that's sort of not necessarily caused by any sort of trauma. It is just that they are born that way. The interesting thing is that they are still romantically attracted to people. And this says so much about the way human attraction works. And, you know, I go very much into the science of romantic attraction in the book, and you know, we have sexual attraction, and animals have sexual attraction, and we sort of have that evolution in evolutionary terms. That's so that we can continue our species. You know, it's a good thing we have that. But what humans have, and what no other animal has, is romantic attraction, and that is when you just can't stop thinking about someone. You know, we've probably all had that experience where there's just something about someone, and you're not necessarily physically attracted to them, but you just really like them. There's some chemistry. Or sometimes the opposite can happen. There can be some really good-looking person in the room, but you're just not, you know, you think, okay, they're good-looking, but I'm just not attracted to them. And that's because romantic attraction is very different to sexual attraction. So what, you know, what asexuals experience is this draw to someone. They still feel that, you know, the butterflies in the stomach, the heart skipping a beat when the person that you fancy walks into a room. They still experience that. But they don't have, that doesn't translate, you know, for most people that translates into wanting to go to bed with them. But for an asexual, that doesn't necessarily translate into physical feelings.
Right. So in other words, this is an alternative. It's not so much a matter of choice. If you're asexual, you're in the sense that you're talking about it, it's you're born with that disposition, and or at least early on you develop that disposition.
Yes. It's not a choice, but I suppose it's a choice to embrace it and to come out as asexual, mm-hmm. and to it's very bold to make that statement, and to seek another asexual relationship is a choice. Whereas I think a lot of people that I interviewed said that because they didn't really know what asexuality was, or didn't really know what was wrong with them, they just tried to go along with it. They just tried to conform to a normal relationship, thinking this is what I've got to do to fit in. So again, it's another example of how we all conform to this fairy tale narrative that this is what I have to do.
Hopefully, the romantic attraction they might have would be towards, you know, somebody sexually compatible. In other words, me, a fellow asexual person. You know what I mean? Because if they go through that must be really hard if they feel the romantic attraction.
Yeah, well, thankfully now we have the internet, so these people can be put in touch with other asexuals. There are actually asexual dating sites out there.
Right.
You know, imagine what it was like before the internet. You know, that then they become marginalized. I mean, we live in an amazing world now where the internet has enables us to be put together into, you know, seek out niche social groups. So for asexuals, that means they can meet each other. For people who want an open relationship, they can go, you know, there are websites for that. And likewise, you know, for just generally for people who want to remain single or who like being single and thrive, you know, what one thing that the internet does is allow that as well, because it puts you in touch with all sorts of social groups. So, you know, people are looking to coupledom a lot less to satisfy their needs, their social needs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's one of the key things which is shaping relationships, and which is probably one of the reasons why more of us are going to choose non-conventional relationship setups, is because because the internet makes it so easy for us to meet either like-minded people or just to remain single completely.
Right. What other alternatives are out there besides the few that we've talked about?
So I looked at women who have opted out of a relationship altogether and decided to go with sperm donor. Now, some of them had done it on their own, and some of them had done it with what is known as a co-parent, which means that they partner up with a man because they want a man to take a share in the child rearing duties, and they conceive a child through sperm, you know, through artificial insemination, and they raise the child that way. So I went to this networking group of women who'd done just that. It was a support group so that they could meet other women. And it's very interesting, two types of women, the ones that had done it totally on their own. And for them, what was very interesting was what they said was that they, in an ideal world, they would have loved to have started a family and had a baby with a man, with their soulmate. They would have loved to have met someone, lived happily ever after, and done it the traditional way. The reality was, they said they had never met anyone that they liked enough to do that with. And to them, they were of a certain age, you know, getting older. And they thought, well, actually, having a child is more important than meeting a man. And I think that's very, that's a real sign of the times, that the fairy tale no longer applies. You know, women can say, actually, having a child is more important than the fairy tale, because they can. You know, they have the means, so they have the financial power to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing. That's what I think is amazing about these women. What it shows is that we no longer need to be part of a couple to start to procreate and start a family. Then there are the women who went the other route, and they wanted a man in their lives, but they didn't necessarily want to be romantically involved with someone. So there are websites, co-parenting matchmaking sites, where women can meet men who want to be fathers and women that want to be mothers, but are not necessarily looking for a relationship. And it's complicated, you know, but they can presumably, you know, if they meet and they're compatible and they can agree to artificial insemination and start a family together and have a totally platonic relationship where they live separately, but they share the child rearing duties. And, you know, what the women said who did that was, they said, you know, in so many ways that's easier for them, because they said, you know, again, I'd love to meet a man that I was in love with, that I could do this with, but actually, unless you meet someone who's perfect, that man can be more of a hindrance than a help.
Right. Okay, so what other forms do we have? And actually, we only have, only like 30 seconds. One more. Okay, what's the most interesting alternative that you found that you feel like a lot of listeners might really relate to?
I think, okay, the one that I relate to, and I think a lot of people will, is the couples who live, it's called living apart together, basically married couples who live apart. Now, that is my ideal. I would love to find a soulmate. I would love to find someone who's going to be around in my life for a long time, but it doesn't necessarily have to share a roof with and share a bed with, because I don't sleep that well together. And everyone I spoke to, you know, all the couples I interviewed who are in the situation, they said, oh my gosh, all our friends are so jealous. You know, they think it's weird at first, but actually they all relate, and they all say, oh yeah, wouldn't it be great if I had my own place and my husband or my wife live next door? Because then you have the best of both worlds. You have the intimacy, but without living on top of each other. And why not? We live in an era where we can.
All right. Ellen, I've got to end it. We're at that moment. Thank you so much. Just again, you've been listening to Mind Matters, and we've been talking with Helen Croydon, the author of Screw the Fairy Tale. Join us next week. We'll be talking to Shamar Rinpoche, a Tibetan Lama and author of The Path to Awakening. Mind Matters Radio is part of the Healthy You Radio Network.